You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. You guys are listening to episode 32 of the Metal from the Inside podcast, and I am so thrilled for my guest this week. I had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with one of my favorite hard rock and heavy metal photographers, Mr. Mark Weiss, who just released his first book entitled The Decade That Rocked back in 2020. And if you guys are a fan of the 80s glam metal scene, or it's also often referred to, quote unquote, the hair metal scene, which I don't really like to call it that, but you guys know what I'm talking about. All of those bands that were on the LA Sunset Strip scene at that time, from Bon Jovi to Def Leppard, Dokken, Motley Crue, Cinderella, all of those bands that you guys know and love. So I'm sure that if you know of that scene and are a fan of it, you are 100% familiar with Mark's work, his photos, and of course, probably knew about the release of his most recent book. But it's so interesting because I mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, which you will hear in just a couple of minutes, but I grew up listening to this music, and I also grew up, you know, seeing all of Mark's photographs. And when I first got my hands on this book and, you know, originally saw photos of it online and was really starting to keep up with Mark and what he was doing and sharing, you know, especially upon the release of this book, I was so taken aback about just how many photos he has taken that are some of my favorite photos ever. Like, he has taken pretty much every picture probably of every band that you've ever loved. It's insane. You know, from, like I said, from Van Halen to Ozzy to Dio to pretty much every rock artist that you could think of during that time period. So another really interesting thing about this book is that along with all of these photos that he got out of his archives and chose to put in the book, he also includes a lot of behind the scenes stories of, you know, shooting these photos, these specific photo shoots, you know, how a lot of these album covers that he shot came to be, working with specific artists. You know, he really goes into detail about all of this stuff in the book. And aside from Mark's own stories, he also has the artists that he shot with share their stories about Mark, what it was like, you know, doing photo shoots with him during that time period, and not only having it be a professional relationship, but a friendship as well. And it was just really cool to get the entire kind of picture, the entire perspective from Mark to the artists that he shot to, you know, people who worked with him during that time. It was just a really well put together book. And as we mentioned later on as well, the book is in chronological order, so it goes through the entirety of the decade in the 1980s. It goes through every single year and, you know, takes you through his first start working with Circus to, you know, even what he is doing now, you know, at the very end of the book. But he also goes through every album cover that he shot during each year of the 1980s. You know, that's another thing. Mark has, you know, shot the photos for, you know, so many album covers that I love and I'm sure that you love as well. You guys know how I feel about Dokken and Under Lock and Key, and he shot that album cover, which just amazed me. You know, he shot the album cover for Yngwie Malmsteen's Odyssey, and, you know, the band shots for that, the inner sleeve shot for that record, Cinderella's Night Songs, Twisted Sister's Stay Hungry. You know, he's also most known for shooting the cover for Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet. The list just goes on and on. You know, he has taken so many iconic pictures of that time and just really, really captured, I feel like, what it was like to, you know, be in that scene in the 1980s. And again, I'm speaking as somebody who wasn't even around in the 1980s, but I feel like if I was, that's what it would have been like, you know, these photos that Mark took and, you know, these moments that Mark captured. So I really wanted to get Mark on the podcast because, of course, he released this book. And it occurred to me when I was actually going through the episodes of the podcast, you know, I'm always trying to figure out who I want to have on next. And I was kind of going through all of the episodes, seeing who I've had on from each band and, you know, kind of just serving, you know, who I've had on the podcast, you know, I realized that I haven't had a photographer or really a lot of industry workers that worked during that time, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, capturing, again, those moments from that time period where these bands were at their ultimate peak and, you know, were playing huge shows like the US Festival, which Mark shot, and the Moscow Peace Festival in 1989. He shot that too. You know, just these incredible events and, you know, the peak of these artists' careers. I've had modern photographers on who are shooting now, and of course, Mark is still working. He is still taking pictures. He is still in the scene and, you know, is very much working as a photographer. But I thought that his insight would be just insightful about, you know, that time period and what it was like, you know, working with these bands and going out on tour and, you know, working for a, you know, huge magazine like Circus and, you know, all of these different things. So I thought, what better person to have on than Mark Weiss? Of course, I wanted to discuss this new book, which I definitely recommend that you pick up if you have not already. Again, it's entitled The Decade That Rocked, and you can go to www.thedecadethatrocked.com. Here you can purchase the book, and I'm pretty sure that Mark has a lot of different packages that you can get, even like prints and a signed copy of the book if you like. He has a bunch of stuff on his website, so I would definitely recommend going there and purchasing the book. It's just really great. So if you haven't ordered the book already, I definitely recommend that you do so. He also describes a little bit in the interview at the very end his plans for possibly a future book, which I would be very into seeing, as I'm sure many of you would be as well. I can't even imagine how many photos Mark has that we haven't seen. You know, he probably has so many in his archives and, you know, buried deep in his storage that we haven't seen, that, you know, I'm sure so many fans would love to see and, you know, that he would want to share. So I'm hoping that he does do a second book at some point in the future. But yeah, this is a really great conversation. Like I mentioned, we get into a lot of different stories regarding some of the photos, you know, his journey as a music fan and a photographer, you know, his friendships with some of these musicians that he photographed many, many times over the years. And, you know, aside from everything that he did in the 80s, we also get a little bit into what Mark is doing now, you know, how he kind of handled the genre shift in the early to mid 90s and, you know, kind of went on to continue his photography career when metal, you know, wasn't the dominant form of music at the time. So it's a really interesting conversation. If you love metal and, you know, all of these different artists from Van Halen to Ozzy to Dio to Motley Crue to Dokken to Def Leppard, all of these bands, you are going to absolutely love this episode. This is a must listen. And while we're on the topic of books, I also wanted to mention that Ronnie James Dio's autobiography is officially set for release on July 27th, and I know what you guys are thinking. How could Ronnie James Dio write an autobiography? He passed away over 10 years ago at this point, you know. Why is it being released now? What's the deal? Well, I'm going to tell you. Ronnie actually began writing this autobiography before he passed away in 2010, and the book is finished by author Mick Wall, so I'm not 100% sure how much Ronnie got to write of the book, whether it was a couple chapters, half the book, three quarters of the book, or if he wrote a full book and, you know, it's just a draft. I'm not 100% sure how much Ronnie got to write before he passed away, but it's not an unusual thing to have a co-author anyways. A lot of these rock autobiographies and many autobiographies in general have a co-writer come in to help things flow a little bit better or edit or, you know, be a part of it to make it flow a little bit easier. So, you know, having a co-writer really isn't that big of a stretch or a big deal. So I'm really curious to read this book and, you know, hear some of Ronnie's career in his own words. You know, this is going to cover everything from, you know, Dio's career, starting with his, you know, beginnings as a doo-wop singer, which I'm sure many of you Dio fans are aware that he did sing in a doo-wop group initially. You know, his start in the Vegas Kings, which was his first, you know, real band, you know, eventually Elf, you know, going into Rainbow, Black Sabbath, eventually Dio. It even covers his falling out with Ritchie Blackmore. You know, it's really set to cover pretty much everything about Dio's career, and I'm really excited to read it. I'm curious to see, you know, how much Dio had a part of this and, you know, just what the book has to offer, because you can never have too much information on, you know, Dio and his career. And once again, the book is entitled Rainbow in the Dark, It is set for release on July 27th of this year through the publisher Permuted Press. So stay tuned for that. You can pre-order the book now. Speaking of Dio and Ronnie, I want to thank everybody for the wonderful feedback on my last episode, my interview with Vinny Appice, which was on episode 31 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I got so many wonderful YouTube comments, which if you guys would prefer to actually watch the interviews instead of just listen to them, Metal from the Inside is also on YouTube. So if you just go into the search bar, type Metal from the Inside in, we should come right up. You can subscribe. And yeah, all of these Zoom calls are directly uploaded to YouTube, so you guys can actually watch the interview instead of just listen. So if you guys would prefer that route, that is available for you all. My interview with Vinny is up on YouTube, as well as my interviews with Jolyn Turner, Martin Popoff, as well as the interview that you guys are about to listen to, my interview with legendary hard rock and heavy metal photographer Mark Weiss. That interview will be up on YouTube as well. As always, stick around to hear one last message from me, but we're going to get right into my interview with Mark Weiss. This interview is a little bit on the longer side, over an hour. You know, many of my interviews recently have been on the longer side, which to me is a great thing. You know, we just kind of get into conversation and, you know, talk about a lot of different stuff. So I want you guys to have the opportunity to listen to all of Mark's insights and, of course, hear about his brand new book, The Decade That Rocked, which is available for order now, once again, at www.thedecadethatrocked.com. We're going to take a very short break, but when we get back, we're going to dive right into my interview with renowned hard rock and heavy metal photographer, Mr. Mark Weiss. Welcome, everybody, back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. Joining me this week is legendary rock and roll photographer Mark Weiss, who just recently released his brand new book, The Decade That Rocked, back in 2020. Such an incredible book. If you guys haven't seen it already, I definitely recommend that you pick it up. And of course, today we're going to talk a little bit with Mark about the book and some stories about some of the photos that he's taken. But first, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this week's episode. And how have you been?
I'm good. Thanks, Sydney, for having me. Good to chat with you. I'm glad there's some youngins out there carrying the torch. So I appreciate the spreading the word.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've grown up, and my audience knows this as well, but, you know, I've grown up listening to this music and, you know, seeing so many of your photos and books and everything. So, you know, when I saw that this book came out, you know, it was one of those things where I saw the book and, you know, saw videos of it online at first, and you've taken so many pictures that I, like, was going through them. I was like, oh my God, he took this one too. He took this one too. You know, I grew up seeing all these pictures in different books and everything. So before we get into the book specifically, you know, I know a lot of the time people ask you about, you know, you're starting photography and, you know, we kind of know the story. You got your camera when you were 13. You know, I want to get into that a little bit when you kind of snuck into shows. But, you know, something that's really interesting about the book is, you know, you tell your stories regarding these artists. But the fun thing is that if you guys look in the little blurbs next to the pictures, you know, you have the artist that you shot with tell their stories about you, which is so, you know, interesting and such a cool feature. So, you know, every single one of them, you know, mentioned that you're very passionate about music, which of course you are. And I'm not too familiar about your start when it came to getting into music yourself. So where did that passion initially, you know, come from, and where did it get its start for you when you started to love music?
I got my camera from mowing, some neighbor gave me a camera from mowing the lawn. So, you know, that was when I was like 12. And then fast forward a couple of years, my brother was a couple years older than me. So when I was like 14, he brought me to a concert, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Sly and the Family Stone, and just some, you know, I just tagged along because it was just a whole thing. You know, he always had some hot chicks with him. And so it was just fun. And, you know, there's a lot of pot smoking, and I was just kind of, you know, getting into all that stuff. So I just followed my brother around. He had a garage band as well. He played Steppenwolf and it got out of Vita and all that stuff. So just followed my brother around. And then I kind of got attracted to the whole scene, the whole music scene.
I feel like it's that's something that's so keeps coming up when I ask a lot of that same question. A lot of these, you know, journalists and even photographers, they, you know, I just spoke to Martin Popoff too, and it was the older brother that usually kind of got a lot of you guys into this, which is so interesting. But to me, I mean, your story, when I was really thinking about your story, and of course I read the book and the blurbs and everything that you put together. But your story in a way to me is just, I was thinking so reminiscent of Cameron Crowe's in a way. I'm a big Cameron Crowe fan. And to me, I mean, you had, of course it was with photography instead of journalism, but you know, you kind of snuck into shows and you started out really young, and you know, you went on to, you know, got photos printed in your local paper, and then, you know, went on to a bigger magazine. So, you know, for you, you know, what was it like? Because, I mean, I saw that, you know, you got your first photo printed in the paper Spectrum, which, you know, was kind of a tie into your old high school professor, teacher.
Yes, yeah.
So what was it like for you the first time that you saw one of your photos in print?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, the first time it was in Spectrum magazine, it was just like a local Jersey thing. One of my teachers in high school has a friend that worked for Spectrum who was also a teacher, and this guy named George Dassinger. And he said he's looking for a photographer. He hooked me up. I'm a film teacher in high school. And I met George, and George took me around to some local places. He says, we can't pay you, but we'll get you a photo pass. And at that point, I was sneaking in my cameras anyway, and I figured I'd get, you know, photo passes. They weren't big acts. They were like this band called Poco and Steppenwolf without John Kay in it. It was just like, you know, smaller little venues, but it gave me access. It gave me a little feel for being in the photo pit and going backstage and meeting the promoters, doing trade photos. And that contact really, and seeing my first photo in there was really, really awesome. My first real photo credit that really really meant a lot was the Steven Tyler centerfold in Circus Magazine in 1978. That's, you know, when I first kind of got my name published in a major rock magazine.
Yeah.
And that magazine I was looking at since I was like, you know, my brother used to have a subscription when I was like, you know, 13, 14 years old. So for me, that was a big day.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I wanted to ask too, I mean, you know, you decided you're going to do this book, and, you know, I know your assistant also kind of helped you go through your archives and everything that you had. Cause I mean, I can't imagine how many photos you have stored that we even haven't seen. But, you know, you're going through these pictures and, you know, you had your time in circus, you've shot with so many people over the years. You know, when you were kind of going through these, did you ever, you know, kind of sit back and kind of go, oh my gosh, like I have this, just the magnitude of your career kind of hit you? Because I mean, you've done so much, and, you know, starting out, yeah, with a magazine that you, you know, read when you were 13, and, you know, you became like their mainstay photographer. You know, how did it feel to kind of relive those moments when you were putting together this book?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I was so busy in the 80s, like it just took off, like from the late 70s, the first assignment I shot with Circus was Van Halen in 79. And then I just, from then on, I just didn't stop. I met this one, I met that one. I started working for the bands, doing album covers, touring and all that. So I never really put together a portfolio, and we didn't have websites back then. So it was just word of mouth, and it seemed to be working for me. And I was just busy doing what I love to do. And this is kind of like my first portfolio. And I just wanted it to be special. I wanted to have something that, you know, generations to come is going to see. And the real inspiration was my grandson, Jackson, who was born 5 years ago, because that's when I actually started the book. And I just wanted, you know, when I'm not around and his kids, you know, I want them to know whose grandfather is, great grandfather, and everyone else too. But really, it's, you know, Jackson Mark Weiss is the inspiration.
Oh, that's so sweet. And I mean, you worked on this for about 5 years. So what was the process like, I think, as a whole? Because I mean, I obviously just said you started it because of your grandson and, you know, wanting to have this generation carry on. But I mean, 5 years is a decent amount of time. And I'm sure that the book went through a lot in that time period. So what was the process like of just putting it together, you know, choosing what kind of photos you wanted to include, and kind of just maybe the overall layout of the book?
Yeah, it was, I didn't even know, to be honest with you. It's like, I didn't even, the first book was going to be a different book. The contract I signed was 2 years earlier than that. So really the book was 7 years in the making. The first 2 years was dedicated to a book, which I was going to do just on hair metal bands. And because I thought it would be an easy book to do. I didn't really want to commit to doing this big, like, you know, biography, or not biography, but narrative thing. So I kind of took the easy way out. So I thought, and I was going to just do, you know, like probably 1985, 1986, all the bands had the highest hair. I mean, Guns N' Roses, you know, all the bands, Bon Jovi, Ozzy even had, you know, tons of hairspray in.
Yeah.
Motley, Poison, of course, but, you know, everybody did. So I was going to do a book just on that, a smaller book. And then after I started putting it together, I realized it's like, I don't want this to be my first book, because I never really did a book before. And then I decided, okay, I see the process. I like working with everyone that I'm working on the book with, you know, the publisher. And then I just decided to say, wait a minute, let's change this around. Let's make this be a narrative. Let me interview people. Let me let them interview them, tell them their stories about me tell my stories, and just see where it goes. So we started doing the interviews, And then we started, then I started to have to think, all right, now we have all these interviews and now what are we going to do with it? And at the same time, we're scanning, you know, Camille's scanning photos, who's my archivist. And then I said, okay, we got to make sense of this. First, we were going to do it in like, all right, well, just, it, I wanted it to be 1980 to 1990. That was it. And a chapter on the early years to tell like my story. So that was easy. So I got that out of the way, the early years. That was like, it's probably like 20 pages in the book. But then when 1980 started, then I had to like, I was like, okay, let me start with 1980. And then I'll go, let me just concentrate on that. And then I did that. And then I did 81, 82. And I went all the way to 90. And then I took that. And then we were debating whether to group all the Ozzy photos and stories together, you know, and then all the Poison and all the Motley. And then I thought that would be kind of confusing, you know, it'd be like, you know, the stories of them and not really my story. So I decided just break it all up. And whatever happened in 1980, that's what happened. So it's pretty much a historic visual history through that decade of through me. And through me, really, you can see how a lot of things changed in the music. You know, you see, yeah. You know, new bands that came up, you know, with Bon Jovi when I shot him when he was 8, you know, in The Rest, he was 18, you know, through his first album when he was 20 in 1983. And then all the way through to the, when I shot him at Giant Stadium in the Moscow Peace Festival headlining. So you got the whole history of it, but it is where it should be. And, you know, just telling my stories, you know, telling the stories on how I met Sebastian and ended up in Skid Row, coming to my wedding and, you know, and Zach too, meeting him and helping him get into Ozzy and all the festivals that I weave through, you know, with me, like from US Festival to the PMRC hearings with Dee Snider to Live Aid when I was Sabbath, they reunited and I was the photographer for that. To Hearing Aid, which was an amazing time with all these artists donating their time, kind of like, you know, so people were helping out on that. And then to the Moscow Peace Festival. So, you know, my career in, from 1980 to 1990 was a nice chunk of history taking photographs. So it made sense to do it that way.
I love that so much about the book and the fact that it did go chronologically. And I totally know what you mean of like, you know, you had the progression of, you know, I shot Ozzy for the first time here. And then, you know, kind of seeing your relationship with him progress and the different, you know, visions that you had with Ozzy progress. And, you know, the, like you said, having Sebastian at your wedding and then 1989 came and then it was Skid Row. So I definitely think that the chronological aspect to it, you know, even I loved the cover pages you had for each decade where, you know, you had 1988 and it was all of the different, you know, album covers you shot or the passes that you had. And, you know, I think that that definitely worked. And again, very appropriate for the title, you know, the decade that rocked, you know, and, you know, kind of getting into a little bit about what you, you know, your start and, you know, you did sneak your camera into different shows and, which is an incredible feat, by the way, that you were able to do that so often. But, you know, you stuck your camera into shows and you shot Kiss, you shot Aerosmith. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Alice Cooper because, you know, my listeners know I love Alice. He's, you know, my favorite, my end all be all kind of musician. But you shot him for the first time in 77 on the King of the Silver Screen tour. And then, you know, you ended up shooting him many times over the years in the 80s. And something that I thought was so interesting was he even went on to quote in the book that if you're going to be doing a photo session for a magazine or anything like that, it was heavy metal or hard rock, it was probably going to be Mark Weiss. So for you, that seems like it must be such a full circle moment to have this person that, you know, you snuck your camera in to photograph, you know, go, it was assumed that we would just shoot with Mark Weiss. I know that was like that for many different bands at that time for you though. So, yeah. You know, what was it like for you? You know, you went from, again, sneaking your camera in, shooting these bands to, you know, they became not only your colleagues, but, you know, some of your closest friends as well.
Yeah. I mean, I always said like, anytime I shot a new band, you know, whether they were signed or not signed, I'd have four or five new friends, you know, and pretty much for life. Cause most, if not all the people that I've shot back then are still my friends. I still, you know, whether they play stadiums or they play little clubs or they just hanging out, not even doing anything, you know, I just stay in touch with them because, you know, that's why I got into this. Like I like meeting people and hanging out and having something in common with them and actually doing something that helps them and that they enjoy and they see my what I do. And what I do best is make people look good. I know how to do it, you know, whether it's just me just being there and capturing the moment, which is what photography is all about, and throwing a little light here, a little light there, and then being more creative and building sets like the Stay Hungry set and The Last Command and, you know, Doc and Underlock Key, all those, you know, so it's all, I wanted to do it all, you know. I a lot of photographers from the 60s and 70s that I admire that they all had their specialty, but I took a little bit from each one because I wanted to do it all. I didn't want to just be the guy backstage like Bob Gruen or do the album covers like Lynn Goldsmith or like Mick Rock, you know, doing, you know, I wanted to do a little of this, a little of that. And I feel like I achieved it by keeping my relationships up and knowing when to find out that when they were doing an album cover or a video shoot where I can be there or just whatever they're doing that's special. I mean, you know, that's really what I wanted to do. So a lot of it's homework, keeping your ears open, and having the connections with the magazines always helps too, of course, you know, because they want to be in the magazine. So, you know, once I was the guy, which was, you know, still, I was in my early 20s when I was the guy, you know, I'd get calls from the publicists, the record companies, the managers, you know, all that. So, you know, it just snowballed and I just went with it.
I think a big part of it too, and I know a lot of people say this, you know, comes down to trust and the fact that they did trust your vision and trust that you would respect boundaries and what they envisioned too. So, you know, I think that that's something that, you know, also made you so well to work with because people really trusted you and what you had in mind for, you know, the shoots and everything like that. I know when you've dabbled in doing so many different things, like you mentioned, gosh, I forget who said this in the book. Somebody, one of the artists that you shot, you know, said that you do such a great job at just genuinely capturing the moment. Might've been Eddie Trunk in the afterword of that. You know, do such a great job at just capturing moments that are so organic. I mean, you know, you did the photo shoot stuff. You had, you know, the stuff where you would, you know, be a setting where people would come in and it would be a photo shoot, but you also were so great at capturing just moments. I've dabbled a little bit in amateur photography over the years. I'm no professional. I, you know, kind of take pictures here and there, but it's so interesting because, I mean, I've noticed how lighting is so such an integral part of, you know, doing a shoot and having photos come out great. So, you know, you did the photo shoot settings, but you also captured, you know, moments that weren't in settings that were, you know, made for a photo shoot. So, you know, how long did it take for you, I guess, to kind of perfect getting those moments and getting, you know, those shots, you know, those perfect shots in those moments? Because I know sometimes lighting isn't ideal, and I'm sure that you obviously know more about that than I do, but it's something that I've always been curious about because I feel like lighting and in general, you know, and having light look good on a certain, you know, person or in a certain way, you know, is kind of what sometimes makes or breaks a shot.
Right. Well, it is all about lighting, and it's, you know, whenever I go on the road, it's the easiest because I just go have fun and, you know, and just capture what's there. I don't have to tell anyone what to do. I mean, I would always set up a photo shoot before the show if they're, you know, if they're into it, but I always like to get those minutes, moments before when everyone's out there screaming their names, you know, and they like it too. And it's like, it's just a feeling. And then afterwards, I always like to try to get them after the show and just, you know, sometimes they want it, sometimes they don't, but you know, you got to ask and you got to be there, and then they trust you and they give you more access. Then you go on stage and behind the drum riser and other areas. That's why you go on. That's why I go on for more than just one or two shows, you know, because I want to get different angles and there's so much to capture in different ways. Shooting the same show in the photo pit each day would be a little boring. So, you know, you just want to do that. But as far as the photo studio sessions where, you know, it's more creative, I just learned as I went, you know. When I got the Stay Hungry album cover, I got a call from the band's management to discuss the idea with Mark Mendoza, telling me the idea, and I just kind of went with it. And my father was in home construction, and he helped me build the set. I never did this before, and I just found out that they didn't even know that it was my first album cover I ever did. You know, D was like, you know, he thought I was a pro. You know, I did the, I mean, he knew I did a lot of photo shoots, you know, because I had covers of, you know, Ozzy and Richie Blackmore and bands on cover of Circus. So they knew that I was a, you know, rock photographer, but they didn't know I didn't have experience in album covers, and the record company and management just said, you know, you like this guy, you know, work with him. And so they walked into the set and they were blown away by it. And I just kind of, you know, put a little light here and just made it look realistic. And then we did some other photos. And part of my signature photography is gels and smoke. And to me, like, I love it because, you know, you put up a black seamless and you throw a gel on there, and then you throw some different color gel and then some smoke, and you light it, you throw a light in the background and it just changes whatever color the gel is. So, you know, back then there were so many magazines, and each time when I used to shoot on spec, and even when I shot for the bands, they want as many different backgrounds as possible. So while they're changing clothes or, you know, changing a jacket, I would like throw a different color gel on instead of changing the whole background. Right. And then you throw some smoke in there and it gives it a different look each time. So it's not like it's the same photo every time. The smoke is always moving. You'll never get it the same photo twice, you know? So I just like doing that. And that was kind of like my little signature smoke and gels. And, you know, I just love doing it. And a lot of photographers shoot on white seamless and gray. And I do that more now, but I'm starting to play around with the smoke and stuff. I'm trying to find some cool new rock bands, you know, younger that are into the image that I can play around with that again. So.
Yeah. How did you discover that? That was something that, you know, kind of became your kind of staple, you know, like using the gels and the smoke. Was it just something that you kind of tried it one day and you were just like, man, no, this is cool?
I remember seeing a photo shoot by a photographer. I think his name is Moshe Braca. I think it was his shoot. And I think he did some KISS photos, and he did four photos. I think one with Gene with a volcano, and each guy had his own theme. And I just always loved that whole idea of each one having their own theme. And then I believe he had a lot, he had some gels and there was some smoke, and that always stuck in my head when I was a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about, you know, shooting Stay Hungry, and you've done so many different album covers, which I kind of want to get into just because, you know, to me, so many of these album covers are iconic, you know, growing up with them. But when we were setting this up, you know, you mentioned that you saw my interview with Jill and Turner, and you shot one of the album cover for one of my favorite albums that Joe is a part of, which is, of course, Yngwie Malmsteen's Rising Force Odyssey. So tell me a little bit about that, because did you shoot the whole band on the inner sleeve as well, or was it just
the cover? Yeah.
Okay.
The individuals were, I think they had individuals on the back of the cover.
Yeah.
I think. And I mean, you know, there was no rhyme or reason to that one. I was working with, I think it was on Polygram. So I did Bon Jovi already and Cinderella, and, you know, record company knew me. And I've shot Yngwie before at some stadiums playing with some other bands. And I met him a couple times. And when they threw my name in, you know, he says, yeah, let's grab Mark. You know, I like the dude. And he takes good photographs, and we really didn't have a theme. I don't even know if I knew the name of the album at the time, but we just did some cool rock photos and did some different things. And then I turned them in, and then they did a treatment to it. And that's how that image came out.
Yeah. It's super cool. And I mean, that's, you know, one of my favorite albums. So, you know, yeah, I wasn't sure if you shot the band on the inner sleeve as well. Cause I know sometimes when you normally, you know, went in to do an album, was it, you know, always you kind of have, you know, the opportunity to do the photographs on the inner sleeve as well? Or was it kind of, you take pictures and whatever the record company decided would be the album was kind of what happened?
It's usually whoever gets the job for the album packaging, they usually have everything. I mean, yeah, there were instances, of course, that, you know, they'll use a different photo here and there, but if it's a studio album, not a live album, or kind of like something that's more of a on the road type thing, you know, then that's when they'll use other photographers. But, you know, usually I would say probably 100% of all my covers have, you know, everything is in mine, except for I remember later on, like Bon Jovi had an album where I might have had, you know, it was like a live album, so there was maybe four photos of them, and someone had another one. So, you know, I don't consider those like my album covers, you know, those are just like live shots. It's, you know, so but yeah, most of, if not all, my studio albums are usually all my photographs.
You know, you talked about, of course, you know, the first album cover that you did was Stay Hungry. So did you ever before then, you know, you said that you kind of wanted to get into everything when it came to photography, but did you ever envision yourself shooting album covers? Was it ever something that you were, you know, like, man, this is something that I've always wanted to do? Or did you kind of do the first one and you were like, you know, then this is something I really enjoy, and then the offers kind of started coming?
Yeah, no, I've always, ever since I got my first album back in the day, you know, I always wanted to, I thought how cool it'd be to have a photo on an album cover, you know, seeing all the Alice Cooper albums and the KISS albums, and looking at the photos, looking at the credits, looking at who shot it. So yeah, that was always a thing. I don't know, I didn't even think about it because I was so busy doing, you know, magazine covers. I didn't even think about it because, you know, I just got the call out of the blue to do it. But that was something that I would have loved to have done, and, you know, have the opportunity, and it just came my way. And I was starting to get a little restless, you know, looking to do something at that point, you know, because all my photos at that point were on covers of magazines and t-shirts and posters and everything else. So, and then the magazines, like they would be on the stand for like a month and then they go away. It's like, so it's like, and I knew album covers there. Anytime you went into a record store, it's always there.
Yeah.
I mean, who would think that, you know, decades later that wouldn't be there anymore. But now, like, it's funny because I listen to Sirius Radio. I listen to Hair Nation. I listen to Ozzy's Boneyard. And I remember I was taking a walk and all of a sudden, you know, I hear, you know, Night Songs. And then I hear, and then I look down and there's my photo on it, you know, and it's nice and crisp, you know, it's a nice little photo. It's not, you know, like it's not an album cover, an old album cover where it's all like, you know, beat up. It looks really nice and bright. It's little, but you know, and then the next song comes on and it's like, you know, Slippery When Wet, and there my cover comes up, then Britney Fox. And then I, then there's something else. And then it was one that wasn't mine. So I just kind of like changed the channel over to Ozzy Boneyard. And next thing you know, there's I'm the Man from Anthrax. And that was on there. And that's my photo. And then the next song after that was The Wasp, The Last Command. So it was like five in a row. It's like, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Is it for you, it must be just incredible because I mean, these are going to be photos that live on. You like kind of, like you said, it's magazine covers. And even then, you know, people still reminisce on magazine covers too, but you know, these albums are going to be things that people talk about, you know, for decades and decades and decades to come. So it's, I mean, like I can totally imagine, I can't even imagine what it must be like for you to like look down and be like, oh my gosh, you shot that, you know, and I know the whole story and I made that decision and that happened because, you know, I had that creative vision or whatever. But I wanted to talk to you about Night Songs because I live in Philadelphia now. I moved to Philadelphia a couple years ago, but obviously Cinderella, huge Philly band. You know, I went to college on Broad Street, and so they have like their plaque in the Music Walk of Fame, and I used to walk by it all the time. But you know, you shot that album cover as well. I have it up right here. But you shot that album cover, and it's so great because it was in Philadelphia, if I'm correct. And Tom Kiefer had a funny little quote about how you actually shot the cover during the day, and he was like, why is he shooting the cover
right
today? It's called Night Songs. So
yeah,
exactly. Tell me a little bit about that and what that experience was like shooting that cover.
All right, well, I didn't want to shoot it at night because, you know, it's dark, you know, there's nothing there, you know, it's like I you get the same result really, because, you know, like Tom was saying, like he kept saying, why are you shooting it during the day? It's called Night Songs. And I said, just trust me. And he's like, and he just wanted an answer. So I said, I shoot night for day. And he looked at me like I was like nuts. So he's like, oh, okay. And he didn't even understand it then, but he trusted me. And basically, the strobe light, if it's so powerful, it flashes. It's so powerful, it blasts out the ambient light that's in the background. So, you know, the daylight or the sun coming in. So you can control. You can use that. You can use the sun as a light source, and you could, by opening up the shutter, you can bring more light in and give more of a vibe. You know, if that's what you want. So I pretty much blasted out the sun from the background to make it look, it was totally dark. And then I used the gels and the smoke to fill up the area. And that's what made it look like it did.
And, you know, for album covers and everything like that, I mean, was, especially maybe for this one, you know, was this, you saw this picture, you know, of course shot it. Was this the one that you kind of envisioned right away? Cause I mean, there must be probably a couple different shots that you might, you know, consider when you're doing something like this. So was this the first shot that you thought would probably be the one that you wanted to, you know, send in?
Yeah, Tom was the one that wanted to, like, it was just the one shot. We didn't do, okay. I don't even think we did individuals. Like, this is the spot. This is it. We got to make it look as best as we could. I would probably narrow it down to, you know, a bunch of photos, maybe 10 or 15 out of hundreds that we took, and then submitted them. And then they pick the one that they want. The art director will do a layout and then run it by the band. And, you know, I don't really have a say in it, but, you know, they always like, you know, want my opinion and whatnot. So.
And this was shot in the historic district of Philadelphia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is so cool. I mean, it's funny because I didn't really notice that before. And, you know, I was like looking at the architecture and the buildings on the side, and I was like, that is pretty reminiscent of here. I guess I never realized that it was shot here. I mean, you shot a lot of different shows and things in Philadelphia. I know you did a lot of different work at the Spectrum, you know, which was the big venue here, and you did a lot of stuff with, I know the like party shoot that you did with Van Halen was at the Spectrum. So, I mean, cause you were close to Philly, right? I mean, it wasn't too long of a drive for you to get here, cause you were only in Jersey, right?
Yeah. I'm like an hour and 15 minutes. Yeah. And, yeah, I definitely, I did a lot of shows there. Actually, one of my, I think I tell the story in there. It's when I shot Ted Nugent. It was, I think it was 79. And I was driving. I was really tired because I was, you know, up the night before developing film. And I was so tired. And I was at a red light and my foot slipped off the brake. And I hit this car in front of me. I just tapped him, you know. And this guy got out of the car, and there was this family in there. It was a kid crying, a little kid, but I didn't do any damage. And the guy was so like mad at me. And I came out. I said, "Sorry, man. You know, it's like, you know, my foot slipped off the brake." And so I said, "Is there any damage to your car?" And I opened up my door and I put my foot out. And he slammed the door on my foot. And then he sucker punched me and then like knocked me out. And then I'm like, I woke up right as he was taking off. So then I was trying to chase him and find him because it was, you know, he messed me up. You know, I looked in the mirror, my whole lip was hanging down. It was bloody and stuff. So I thought I wrote down, you know, the correct license plate, but I didn't. And then I went and got stitched up. And then after that, I still went to the concert because it was my first assignment with the publicist that hired me, Laura Kaufman, over at Lieber Krebs. And I had to shoot it, you know, I had to go. So I went there, and next thing you know, it, you know, she goes, "Oh, let's go back and, you know, see Ted." And so I see Ted. He's like, "Whoa, what happened to you? He thought I got beat up in the parking lot or something. Someone took my cameras." He goes, "You're right." I said, "Yeah." I told him what happened. He's like, "Oh man, you know," he called me one of his rock warriors. And, you know, to this day, he still calls me that, you know? So, you know, you just develop these relationships and experiences through these people. So, you know, yeah. So Philly definitely I have some ties to. And then just recently, one of my photo shoots that I did at the Spectrum, Life Magazine just did a tribute to Van Halen, and they used one of my photos on the cover that I shot at the Spectrum backstage.
Yeah, which it was funny. Another one, I was going through the book and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that I know. I've seen that picture a million times, and I had no idea that that's where it was shot." You know, the kind of like story behind it. But yeah, that's pretty rock and roll to get your lip cut up, and you know, like,
I know, right?
And still go and do it. No, but yeah, I mean, another band I wanted to talk about briefly too was Dokken, because I love Dokken. Everybody knows this who's listening. They're like, "Can you please stop talking about them?" But I wanted to talk about them because you've done some of their most amazing pictures, you know, from Under Lock and Key, you know, my favorite album, to the Dream Warrior shoot and everything in between. So I know you're still friends with those guys. You're still friends with Don. He did your podcast not too long ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for you, because you've had so many moments with them and have shot so many different things, even the feud picture comes into my mind on Hit Parader. What was your favorite memory of shooting them, you think?
Shooting them, probably American Bandstand, when I went with them with Dick Clark. That was like fun. You know, it's like, you know, I loved Dick Clark just like they did, and they couldn't believe they were on it, you know. So that was a cool moment. It was fun. It was easy. Everyone was, you know, in awe of Dick. And yeah. I'd say that would be it. And all the times we just hang out all the time, just getting in the, I, you know, travel with them. So we used to like, you know, get in the bus, and sometimes we would just rent a car out, and they would hop in my rental car and get a convertible, and we go to, you know, hotel to hotel and just have fun, have a day off at the beach, and, you know, hang out with locals and just have fun. And Don even, like, you know, we got so close that he just said, you know, when I was coming to LA, he's like, "Where are you staying?" I said, "I'm going to probably stay in a hotel or something." He goes, "Well, I need to stay at my house. I'm on the road, you know." So he gave me keys to his house. So I stayed there when he was there, and I stayed there when he wasn't there, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, you went on tour with so many of these bands, like you mentioned. So that's another thing that must be, you know, obviously kind of developing these friendships, is that, you know, you would go on all these different tours and they got to know you, and then you'd come back and, you know, you would hang out again and whatever. So that must be another kind of experience for you, of having, you know, kind of having so many different friends in all of these camps. And it was kind of probably like visiting old friends again, you know, when you got to go back on tour with them, right?
Yeah, I was like their girlfriend that they came out on the road, you know, like, hey, Mark's here, you know, and you know, they made sure there weren't any other photographers around, you know, because, you know, we were all competitive and they kept us apart. There was a handful of us and you know, they wanted to give each of us our own time. And yeah, everyone, it's like, you know, the road is very monotonous, you know, and then they know whenever I used to come and bring pictures from the other shoots and show it to them, get it approved. I'll bring magazines that they were in. So I always had stuff to, you know, make them feel good and go thinking, you know, make them feel like a rock stars that they were, you know, and cause I get all the issues before anyone else did. And so I was always welcomed, you know, it was fun. You know, I had a bunk, you know, we got drunk together. We party together. You know, help them bring women back because I was in the photo pit and I was always there. And, you know, they would always, you know, look, you know, I remember when I was with Van Halen and David gave me passes and, you know, he would always like have a little system, like, you know, I don't know, five rows back and the letters and, you know, he would either point them out or just give me some signal and give them passes and they go back. And then after the show, they have this whole party and there they are. And, you know, so I was kind of like a, you know, one of the guys that helped them have fun.
Yeah, I mean, you were the difference. You know, you came in and they were used to seeing the same people, and it must have been kind of a breath of fresh air to have you come on the bus and have somebody different. So that, I love those different kinds of stories because I also feel like, again, hanging out with them kind of develops that trust. You get to capture those organic moments. They didn't look at you, I feel like, probably as much of as a photographer as, you know, just a friend who's taking pictures and kind of, you know, capturing a moment almost, probably.
Yeah, no doubt. It was fun.
So another band that I wanted to talk about, which I haven't really heard you speak of too much, is Badlands, which was, you know, immediately caught my eye when I was going through your book because I love that debut record. To me, the most underrated debut albums that came out during that time period. I feel like a lot of the times, it's often overlooked. So, and we, you know, we lost Ray Gillen a couple of years after, you know, you shot with them, you know, in 89. So what was it like to shoot that band and be there, you know, kind of during those sessions? Because I know you worked with Jake before with Ozzy, because, you know, you were there during the Ultimate Sin in 86 and everything. But, you know, what was it like to, you know, get to know Ray and, you know, just experience what that group was like?
Yeah, well, that album is one of my favorite albums. Like, every song is like a killer song. You know, I just, when you mentioned it the other day, I had to put it on again and just, you know, played it. It was really, really cool riffs, great voice, everyone, like, great. And Eric Singer is in the band too, you know, from Now and Kiss. So these are all people that I have relationships with. But Jake, we had fun. You know, me and Jake were friends back in, you know, when he was with Ozzy. And, you know, whenever I came to LA, I had car trouble. He would help me out. He would, because I had this 240Z out there and it would break down and he'd come and fix it. And so, you know, when Badlands came around, the producer, Paul O'Neill, who I knew from Lieber Krebs in the early days, like really early days in like 1980, if not 79, he ended up becoming a producer. He's actually ended up producing Badlands and Sabotage, and he brought me into the mix, and that's how I got the gig. And I think Paul's in one of the photos in at the rehearsal place, recording studio with Chris Cafferty and Jake and Ray. And then we did the photos for the packaging and some of the, I think it was for publicity and promotion. And they were just nice guys, no big stories on them, just nice guys. And, you know, I just wish they lasted longer, you know. It was good music.
I often wonder, you know, what they could have done. I feel like that band just had so much potential and so much that they could have done afterwards. I mean, obviously music was changing at that point in time, which you talk a little bit about at the end of your book. You know, you shot Poison, and I love that you were like, when are you guys gonna get ready? And they were like, we are ready. They were glammed up and everything like that. So I mean, obviously music was changing, and, you know, they put out a couple more records, but I always wonder what, you know, they might have done if they had more time, you know.
Yeah, I think they would have progressed, you know, kind of like a Whitesnake kind of thing. But yeah, let's face it, you know, once the mid 90s came, or the early 90s, like, everyone was kind of like, ran for the hills pretty much.
That was something too, if you don't mind me asking really quickly about, you know, cause that time period was, of course, you know, things were fading out, alternative, you know, whether anybody wants to say that it was grunge that kind of ended things or whatever the reason was. I mean, was there a time period there in your career where you thought that maybe things weren't going as well as you had hoped, or that you ever maybe would have stopped doing photography or anything like that? Or did it kind of just keep progressing for you and you kind of just pushed right. forward?
Well, in 90, 91, 92, Skid Row was still pretty good. I mean, you know, they had Slave to the Grind, and that was a killer album. And so that was 92, and there really wasn't anyone else really out there that was making any noise except for Bon Jovi, which I was working with as well. So, you know, I just figured that I had a great body of work, and that all these new bands were coming in. I was working for Metal Hammer at the time because I shifted to there a little bit. And I started getting assignments to shoot like Alice in Chains and Soundgarden. And I just, you know, I did photo shoots. I met them, but it's like there was no connection. Yeah. We liked the same music still. I mean, you know, I liked their music. I mean, they didn't like Poison and all that, but you know, go back a little bit and we still like Zeppelin and Aerosmith and all that. But, you know, I wouldn't really tell them who I was and what I did. Cause I think I tried that a couple of times and they weren't too impressed, you know, like I didn't want to say I did Slippery and What's out, you know, Bon Jovi's album cover or Dokken or Cinderella. And I didn't think I'd have to ever like hide that, but I really did. I didn't, you know, so I started shooting those bands and, you know, just wasn't fun. You know, they didn't really care. They went through the motions, but I couldn't connect. And I pretty much do one photo shoot and that was it. I wouldn't, unless it was an assignment again. And then, you know, 96, that's when then Kiss reunited and I started working with Kiss. I did a photo session with them, went to Detroit where they had the big stadium, started working for them again. So for me, I was still moving along and actually I was having my kids then 94, 96. So I was okay. Just kind of chilling out a little bit. And then I started shooting for CMC Records and doing like a lot of the classic rock bands that I loved in the '70s, which was great for me. I even art directed some, I did some home videos like Leonard Skinner, REO Speedwagon, Styx, Eddie Money. So all these bands that I really love. So that kept me busy for a good 2 or 3 years. And then I started working for a German magazine called Bravo in the late 90s, who I also worked through in the 80s in the beginning doing like pop stars. But then that's when NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Christina Aguilera are kind of coming out. So I actually started doing photo shoots with these kid bands in sync and making a good living out of it because all the teen magazines wanted them. I did probably one of the first photo shoots with Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And then when Christina Aguilera, because Bravo was a German the biggest German magazine, it had millions circulation, it was a weekly. And I would go with a journalist and we would cover these events. Everyone wanted to be in there. And usually the bands or the acts that were there, they'd break them in Germany, then they bring them to the States. So I'd get them before anyone else and I'd develop a relationship with them. When Christina Aguilera did Genie in a Bottle, I was there on the set. I was hired by Bravo and I saw the manager there and started talking with him and he wanted him trying to break Christina in Germany and knew that my pictures would help do that. So they gave me access. I did a photo shoot and I met Christina and we did photo shoot at the video shoot and it ended up that she liked working with me. And next time they did something, they called me and the manager stayed in touch and I ended up like being her photographer for a while, you know, did album covers for her. She did a Spanish album. She did a Christmas DVD and album. And I did a tour book, went to Hawaii with them. I was their photographer, photographer. So I would again, and then I would also be shooting, you know, a little Bow Wow, a little Wayne. I mean, you name it, you know, Usher. I shoot all these hip hop artists, you know, through the next decade. So I started doing that. So really the rock and roll really wasn't coming back. But then all of a sudden, because of Kiss, so a lot of these bands started coming back and doing package tours. So it was slowly coming back. And then I don't know when it was just full on again, but everyone just came back. And then it was like a resurgence. and it was just fun for me. So I was doing a little bit of everything. I did some music videos. So I kept going. I didn't stop doing what I was doing. I've never been, you know, not busy, you know. Yeah. I'm enjoying my time now because now I'm really just focusing on my book and like making sense out of everything. So unfortunately, the pandemic happened. Fortunately for me and my headspace, it kind of helped it, you know, just not being distracted by going to these concerts, because I would shoot concerts that I didn't really have to shoot. I just liked doing it. It was fun. And then I, you know, have to post them and I edit them and, you know, really wouldn't be a money thing just because I love doing it. So it stopped me from doing that. And now I've been 24/7 just doing interviews and, you know, coming up with different book ideas, because this is my first book and it's on its fourth reprint. They just printing 5,000 more. It's in a second pressing in Brazil. It's in Spanish and it's also in French. So it's, you know, once the pandemic's over, I plan on going on tour with some of these bands and like shadowing them, which was the plan before, like getting a bus and wrapping it with my photos and setting up galleries and,
oh, yeah,
you know, doing appearances and, you know, donating some proceeds to local, you know, organizations and just kind of doing the rock star thing, you know? So that's, so this book has more lives to it, you know? And so my plan is to do another book. Maybe I'll do a book with Motley or Bon Jovi or Guns and Van Halen. I don't know. I like to get the artist, you know, I like to work with the artist. So I've approached everyone and, you know, I'm going to see who comes up with something, because I want to have like a book on just one artist. You know, it could be Ozzy even, you know, I love to do a book on Ozzy. But again, I like to get the blessings of the artist and involvement. So been so busy on this, it's just about to start thinking about, you know, who I want to do.
Yeah, because I'm sure you have so many photos that, again, we haven't seen, or, you know, your audience hasn't seen, that you've kind of maybe even forgotten about yourself, you know, that you could probably, yeah, people would be just as interested if you did kind of like an artist focused book or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I'm very eager to see what you come up with next. And you know, one last thing, I do ask the same five questions at the end of every single one of my interviews, but really quickly before I get into that, you know, again, I mentioned I grew up kind of just seeing all these photos and seeing these album covers and, you know, knowing your photography so well. And they're some of my favorite photos, you know, of all time. And I know I'm not the only one. So what does it mean to you to hear that from fans, you know, not only as a music fan yourself, you know, you grew up listening to all those bands in the 70s and everything like that. But, you know, what does it mean to you as a music fan and also somebody who spent so long, you know, honing your craft and really, you know, working at this, you know, journey?
That's why I'm doing this, because I like the attention. I like to talk about my photography and tell stories and inspire them for whatever their achievement would be. Because, you know, the message is, if you stick to anything and you love what you do, you will succeed. And that's my strong message that I like to get across to anyone that's listening. And, you know, look, if you do something that you love to do, you're never going to work a day in your life. And I don't feel like I've ever worked. I worked hard, you know, I've done hard things, but it's always an achievement, and it's never for a payday. It's just because I want the result. The result is an image that I can share with the world.
Yeah. Like I said, some of my favorite pictures that I've ever seen are yours. So I'm going to get into really quick the same five questions I call the Metal from the Inside Five that I ask at this end of every single interview. The first question is, if you weren't working in the profession that you're currently in, so obviously music photographer, what do you think that you would be doing?
Believe it or not, I'd probably be mowing lawns still. Yeah, I'd probably be having my landscaping business. Not that I'd want that, but you know, my brain doesn't really work academically. It works on feel and vibe and everything. You know, I in the book I mentioned I had a motorcycle accident when I was 12, and my memory kind of got screwed up. And I do things on repetitiveness, and I love mowing lawns. I it's very therapeutic. I still mow my own lawn. I have a big yard, and I just love going back there. And it's not a sit-on lawnmower; it's self-propelled. But, you know, I like just going back and forth and cutting the grass. So that would be. I don't even know what else I would do without besides that, to be honest with you.
You think you did? You ever think about like becoming a musician yourself? Was that ever something?
Oh yeah, of course. Well, yeah. When I realized I had no talent, then that was off the table. I mean, but however, I am actually, I guess you can call it a musician. I called it Welcome to My Exhibition, and it was a virtual show of this museum that I had my photos on exhibition at Monmouth Museum. And it was huge. You know, I put up my gold records, the guitar that Zach gave me for my birthday, and the manhole from Twisted Sister was there, and my tour jackets and gold records. And it was, and my photos, I had my darkroom set up, the original darkroom, and actually the Slippery When Wet photo shoot with how I shot the girl and the t-shirt that she wore that I cut up personally, you know? So, and she was even there at the opening, Angela. So I had this museum, and we had a closing there, and I had my good friend Keith Roth, who was a serious DJ on Hair Nation and Ozzy Boneyard. He also has a band called Frankenstein 3000, and he does stuff with David Johansen on the Mansion. He's got like a radio show. And so yeah, he helped me, and we assembled what we called Keith Roth and the Ghouls, and we got Rob Affuso to do a couple Skid Row songs. I got Mark Tornillo from Accept, and Jerry Gaskell from King's X. So you know, we kind of had this show, and I actually opened the show up dressed up like Alice Cooper, and I actually sang Welcome to My Nightmare, and we went into 18, and it was fun, you know? So I'm actually planning on taking that with Keith and some of my friends that I mentioned on Halloween time, and creating a little kind of a photo visual story where my photos actually come to life. Like, I have a screen with my photo of Alice Cooper getting hung, and then there's me getting hung in the same position as my photo. And then it comes up, and then I sing Welcome to My Nightmare, and going into the decade of my photographs, and having, like, you know, it's a whole concept that we're putting together now. So hopefully we'll have it, you know, if the venues are open by October, that we'll launch it just for a few shows just to see if it's, you know, to have some fun. So musician would be my number one choice, obviously, you know, but I can't sing. I just fake it a little bit, you know. Welcome to My Nightmare is pretty much talking, you know. So
I'm gonna have Rob on my podcast in a week or two, so I'm gonna have to ask him about that and that show and everything. That sounds so cool. Even doing something like that and tying it in with what you're talking about of, you know, kind of going out on the road with your book and everything like that would be a cool idea. The second question is, what do you wish everybody knew about you? Whether that's a secret talent or a guilty pleasure or something that somebody may not know.
That I am accessible. Like, if, you know, like new bands, local bands. I mean, a lot of times I miss jobs from even bigger bands because they didn't think they could afford me. So it's like, and I like working with everybody. If a band is not signed and they have a small budget and I like what they're doing. So I guess the answer would be that I am accessible. I'm a click away. My emails go to my website and you can find my email. I read them. And if it makes sense, and if it's a band that I pretty much reply to everything. And if it's a band, you know, I would only say if it's a band that wants me to, you know, see if I'm interested in working with them and they don't have a lot of money, just send me a video, a couple clips, and tell me why, you know, give me some, tell me your passion and what you're about, and I'm around.
Yeah. So to anybody listening, be sure to go ahead and do that if you're interested, because that seems like a pretty cool opportunity. So have at it. Number three, this is the typical question, but if you were stranded on a desert island and you only had three records that you could bring with you to listen to, what would they be?
Definitely Physical Graffiti and Toys in the Attic. And what's the third one? Appetite for Destruction.
Those are three good ones. I'm surprised you should try to sneak one in. That's one of your pictures, so you can always have a copy of one of your photos with you.
Night Songs. I like Night Songs is a good one, but, you know, you pick between Led Zeppelin and Cinderella, you know.
Number four, what is one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self if you could?
Just don't do anything different.
That's a good one. Yeah, everything happens for a reason, right? You know.
Yeah, I've been really lucky with that. You know, it's, I don't know. I just, you know, it's all good. I have no complaints. Very happy. I have two great kids. I have a grandson. I have a place to put everything. I'm safe and sound, and got my health right now. Hopefully, it stays that way. And you know, it's all good.
The last question I have for you is more of a fun one. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
A superpower?
Yeah.
I have probably x-ray vision.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. You know, like I said, I've admired your work and, you know, everything that you've done over the years. So I really appreciate it. It's been a blast.
Thanks, Sydney from Metal From Inside.
Yes. You guys just finished listening to my interview with legendary hard rock and heavy metal photographer Mark Weiss. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed putting it together. Like every single episode, this one was so much fun for me. You know, like I mentioned in the intro and in the interview, I have grown up seeing all of Mark's pictures. It was so unbelievable to, you know, see all of these photos that I'm so familiar with in his book, and of course have the opportunity to speak with him about taking these photos and, you know, hear some of these incredible stories that he has to offer. So I hope you guys got something out of it and got some information on some of your favorite photos and album covers as well. It's really incredible to also hear about how some of these photo shoots come together. You know, in this interview, we also talk about Night Songs, Cinderella, you know, as you guys just heard. And it was amazing to hear about what went into, you know, creating that album cover and doing that shoot and, you know, Mark's specialty of using gels and smoke to create a lot of the effects that went into so many of his shots. Just stuff that I wasn't even really aware of before myself, you know, when I sit down to do these. I prep a lot and, you know a lot of information about these interviews that I do, but I still get as much information as you guys do when I actually, you know, hear their answers and sit down and have a conversation with them. So I hope you guys walked away, you know, with some cool stories about some of your favorite album covers and your favorite photos. Mark is so great. He was so wonderful to have on the podcast. And I hope to have him on again in the future, you know, once he goes forward with releasing some of those books that he has some ideas for that are currently in the work. So he is welcome anytime. Once again, if you loved what you heard on the podcast and are interested in donating, you can go to www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here you can click on the support button. You can donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. As always, no donation is necessary. I always just like to have the option there for those who are interested. The podcast is available for 100% free on every single streaming service. We're on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon, Anchor, CastBox, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcasts, and no donation is required to listen. So if you'd like to keep up with Metal From the Inside, the best place to do so is at www.metalfromtheinside.com. We're also on Instagram at Metal From the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can also like our official Facebook page at Metal From the Inside as well. We're also on YouTube, like I mentioned in the introduction, at Metal From the Inside. Here you can watch all of the interviews visually. You can see our Zoom calls and actually see our faces while we're, you know, doing the interview and talking. So if you like that option better, YouTube is the place for you. And I would really appreciate it if you guys could hit the subscribe button on YouTube as well. You know, it really helps with engagement and getting a lot of the interviews out there for more people to see who aren't already listening to the Metal From the Inside podcast. So if you love the podcast and you are a YouTube viewer, please subscribe. It would mean so much. If you'd like to stay up to date with me in real time, you can follow me on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. I'm also on Instagram at SydneyAnnaTaylor. And if you'd like to contact me, the contact sheet on the Metal From the Inside website goes directly to me. I love emailing with you guys. I love talking about music. My DMs are also, or my private messages are also open on Twitter and Instagram for you guys to reach out as well. Coming up on the podcast, I actually had the opportunity to chat with a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer last week, and he's going to be the guest on next week's episode. And I never like to give away who is going to be on because it's like my little secret. So I want to see if you guys can guess. This guest is so special to me. It's a really important episode for me, and I really want to know if you guys have any guesses as to who might be joining me. We've been getting so many really great conversations on the podcast lately, and next week's is no exception. There's a lot of interviews in the works as well. And again, my messages and my email is always open. So if you have any guest recommendations or have a guest that you would love to see on the podcast, be sure to shoot me an email, send me a message, and I will do my best to make it happen. This podcast is always for you guys too. So I want to always make sure that you guys are getting your input in and, you know, are hearing what you would like to hear as well. So thank you guys so much for listening. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel and please subscribe subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and be sure to share the podcast with all of your metalhead friends who might not already be listening to the Metal from the Inside podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. We will be back here a week from today for episode 33. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great start to your weekend. Be safe and rock on.